Performance USA, the greatest entertainers in America, as requested by you, the men and women in the United States Armed Forces throughout the world. Command Performance, presented this week and every week, till you're home from the hospitals and back from over there. Hello, gang. This is Hi Everback, bringing on a super-duper Christmas Command Performance. A gigantic jamboree with Christmas choral effects by the Richard Davis Choir. Yes, sir, we trimmed the tree with tinsel and snow, with lots of prize packages sparkling below. We read all your letters, hoping to see what sort of presents would fill you with glee. Your letters kept asking in a manner and music for a wonderful guy whose department is music. So, quick as a flash, we got up off our bustle and got you a present named Andy Russell.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas, gang.
Well, it's well having you here, Andy. Gosh, what a widespread Christmas party this is going to be.
That's right, Hi. This year, some of our troops are celebrating Christmas in tropic heat or freezing cold.
Yeah, and other guys are celebrating it beneath a burning sun or in bone-chilling fog.
Uh-huh, and a lot of other servicemen are stationed outside of California.
Double touche for you.
But anyway, to get the party rolling, Hi, I brought along a very pretty present for the gang. This gal didn't need Santa Claus to fill her stockings the right way. It's the answer to every GI's craving, that oh-so-luscious Gloria DeHaven.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. And Merry Christmas, everybody.
Hiya, Gloria. Say, do you know Hi Averback here?
Hello, Gloria, you delightful, delicious DeHaven.
Oh, why, Hi... Why, Hi, you kissed me.
Well, I had to, Gloria. You were standing under the mistletoe.
How could I help it? You've got it tied to the end of your nose.
Honey, that's not mistletoe. It's lettuce. Always happens when I dive into a salad.
Oh, Hi. Chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. Well, Gloria, I understand you brought a Christmas present. A melodic copy of the DeHaven ditty, which the fellas love the most. Somebody Loved Me. So how's about presenting it to us?
Okay, let's mark this one especially for all the gang down in the canal zone. Maestro Perrier?
I've got a question I want to ask you. Somebody loves me. I wonder who. I wonder who he can be. Somebody loves me. I wish I knew who he can be. For every boy who passes by, I shout, hey, maybe you were meant to be my loving baby. Somebody loves me, I wonder who. Maybe it's you. It was heaven's plan. There should be a girl for every single man. I'm clutching at straws just because I may meet him yet. Somebody loves me. I wonder who. I wonder who he can be. Somebody loves me. I wish I knew who he can be. Worries me. For every boy who passes by, I shout, hey, maybe you were meant to be my loving baby. Somebody loves me. I wonder who. Maybe it's you.
Oh, wonderful, Gloria. We're certainly lucky to have you at our Christmas party.
Yeah, and Gloria, I just can't take my eyes off that special dress you bought just for this occasion.
Well, thank you. This is Adrian's latest design. He calls this a convertible.
Convertible, huh?
Yes, uh-huh.
It's wonderful, honey, but you have the top down on a night like this.
Oh, fine.
Say, hi, Gloria and I had a great time at your Christmas Eve party last night. It was lots of fun.
Yeah, didn't we have a gay old time? Mm-hmm. We filled a big tub with martinis, and then Grandpa spent an hour ducking for olives.
Yeah, and then your Grandpa spent an hour ducking for his teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we spent the evening ducking for Grandpa. And speaking of elderly people, gang, we have a lovable grandfatherly fellow right here. For this Christmas, we couldn't very well bring you any snow. We couldn't bring you a hunk of the North Pole or Santa Claus's igloo. But we are bringing you a man who has an icicle for a nose. And here he is, my boss, Bob Hope.
How do you do? How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob Christmas Command Hope. Telling all you guys, wherever you are, if you've got $50,000, you too can buy a car. Last joke I'll buy from Madman Munch, you can bet that. Ah, Christmas in Hollywood, and of course everybody's been out Christmas shopping. Shopping, that civilian, for you grab for the nylons, I'll make for the shirts, and I'll be at the Mayo Clinic for you. I went out to do a little shopping myself, and you should have seen the mobs of people. The streets were so crowded, my suspenders broke, and I walked 6 blocks before my pants fell down. Inside the stores, it was even worse. Boy, was it crowded. I never saw so many shopping bags, and there were some pretty girls, too. I went up... I tried to hide it from you. I went up to the second floor on an escalator. You know what an escalator is. That's where you keep right on going up without doing anything yourself. But you should have seen that second floor. The whole crowd moved in the same direction. Whether you liked it or not, you bought a silk nightgown. And on me, it looked good. There was such a mob, I climbed up on a counter to get some air. And before I could climb down, I was sold for $1.98. There was quite a fight going on one counter. They just won a pair of beautiful silk underwear shorts for sale. And a general had hold of one end with both hands, and the civilian was pulling on the other. Just then, a private walked in and saluted. He should be out of the guardhouse by 1954. But the big hit this Christmas... the new cars. A lot of these auto companies have been working on airplanes, and they're still a little confused. In fact, one car is a new speedometer. When it hits 60, a red light flashes. When it hits 75, a bell rings. And when it hits 110, a voice says, "There's been a slight mistake in the assembly line, bud. You better bail out." You should see the wonderful new improvements. The two biggest features are air brakes and unbreakable windshields. You can speed up to 100 miles an hour and stop on a dime. Then you press a special button and a putty knife scrapes you off the windshield. Everything is automatic. In fact, this year you press a button that presses a button. But the best thing in the new cars is a special horn. When you pass a brunette, it plays good, good, good. When you pass a blonde, it plays "That's for me." And when you pass a redhead, it stops and you play. I'd like you to meet a grand old trooper. This generation loves him as dearly as the last two did. That lovable old singer of songs, Bing Crosby, right? Right out of bed. Isn't that pretty?
Do you hear that whistle down the line? I figure that it's engine number 49. She's the only one that's gonna sound that way on an Atchison, Topeka, and a Santa Fe. See the old smoke rising round the bend. I reckon that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts get the time of day from the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. Here she comes. Woo, woo. Hey, Jim, you better get out the rig. She's got a list of passengers that's pretty big, and they'll all bump lifts down to Brown's Hotel. 'Cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell, all the way from Philadelphia on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. I figure that it's engine number 49. She's the only one that's gonna sound that way on the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
I'm sure that was thoroughly enjoyed. I'm sure that was thoroughly enjoyed by all limited servicemen with broken hearing devices.
Oh, you're very sweet, Prong Puss. Very sweet.
Listen, Bing, in case you haven't heard, I'm having a big Christmas party tonight.
Free? What kind of a shindig is it going to be?
You haven't got any more of that Gonzaga.
What kind of a shindig?
This kid's going to come up with many a lull here tonight. Where are you? What'd you say, Daddy?
What kind of a shindig?
Well, it's, wait till I see the shins. But I tell you, I was thinking of making it sort of a costume party.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think you're ready. You're ready.
Don't you go any further.
Tell me, what do you think that I should come as?
Why don't you come as a man with hair?
Oh, no.
But I'm only kidding, Bing. I think you have a capital dome. Matter of fact, I noticed a little growth of fuzz there this afternoon.
Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
It's that new octane. Ooh, very smooth stuff.
Goes down easy, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bingo, do you think you can get to my party?
I don't know, Bob. I've got to fix up our own tree for my boys. You're familiar with the Crosby Tots, no doubt.
Crosby Tots?
Mm-hmm.
When is Gary's kids getting out of the service?
You want me to talk about...
Thought you'd never make it, homeboy. I'd check about that. That's a late reaction, all right. You get them later, enjoy them longer. Hey, let's go here.
You want to talk about AIDS? You want to want me to... talking about AIDS, you want me to mention your USO unit at Valley Forge? I wait so long to get something in. It's a big...
Well, you got another line. Just come in.
But you say this is going to be a masquerade party, huh?
Come again?
What are you coming as, really?
I'm coming as the Thin Man.
The Thin Man?
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Everybody will think you've got Aston under your vest there. I'm just in a dither. I don't know how I should appear.
Well, why don't you make up as one of your own horses? Then you wouldn't even have to show. You could just come as a pot of glue or something.
Oh,
you know?
That's Well, if I do make it come to your party, I suppose you'll expect some expensive trinket or bauble or something.
Oh, don't let that worry you, Bing. You didn't last year.
You must be jesting. You don't remember my gift?
Oh, yes, very snappy. A mother-of-pearl button hook. I haven't worn shoes like that since my junior prom at Vassar.
Bob, my dear boy, that wasn't for your shoes. I thought you could use it to take a hitch in your stays.
Look who's talking, a flesh dumpling.
Merry Christmas, Bing.
Well, Dinah Shaw.
Well.
Merry Christmas, Dinah. You remember my colleague here, Bob. If it's not a yacht, throw it out, Hope. You remember
that? Oh, sure. I've known Bob since he was a cub.
That's not fair, Dinah. Haven't I always been platonic with you?
Oh, sure, platonic. That's Hope language, but what did I do with those etchings again?
Are you going to Bob's party, Dinah?
Yes, Bing.
I saw it there somewhere. I saw it.
Are you going to Bob's party?
Yes, Bing, I am. As a matter of fact,
Bob suggested we have a progressive party. You know, at my house, we have the hors d'oeuvres, turkey, cranberry sauce, dressing, vegetables, dessert, coffee, and brandy. And then we all go over to Bob's house.
What's for, to burp?
Johnny, you know very well we're going to do all the eating at my house. All you promised to do was help prepare the stuff. Did you get those hot dogs I sent over?
Hot dogs? All I got was 200 empty skins. What did you expect me to do with them?
Fill them, girl. Fill them.
Well, what with?
Well, you know what with. I sent over 4 turkeys this morning.
Oh, goody. Turkey's hurting.
Turkey furters. By the way. He's always pulling those darbs. Say, by the way, Dinah, remember what you promised to lend me?
Oh, Bob, I don't think I can.
Oh, but Dinah, I need it.
Well,
hey, Bob, Dinah might be wearing it herself.
Stay out of this, Blub. You know, Dinah, what I like about it is that it so little holds so much.
Yes, it does.
And it makes it so firm.
Oh, all right, Bob. I'll lend you my ice cream freezer.
Swell. Now, well, you'll have to excuse me now. I've got to type up a big list of presents, I expect. So I'll see you at the party, Dinah. How about you, Bing? You in?
Oh, I don't know, Bob. I did have a previous engagement.
Oh, you don't have to keep it this year. They can get another baritone in that Salvation Army quartet.
How would the pennies sound so nice? Turkey furters. Penny sounds so nice when they hit my tambourine. I'll think it over, Bob. Meanwhile, there's a sure special dangling under the mistletoe. From the top, please. And Miss Dinah?
You got it, Bing. Every day. Through the slumbering shadows, along the Navajo Trail. When it's night and crickets are calling, and the coyotes are making a way, I dream by a smoldering fire, along the Navajo Trail. I love to lie and listen to the music when the wind is strumming a sagebrush guitar. And over yonder hill the moon is climbing. It always finds me wishing on a star. Well, what do you know? It's morning already. There's the dawn in to climb into my saddle and ride the Navajo Trail.
Thanks a million, Dinah. Thanks a lot. Now, Ken Carpenter, tell me, how can we add a touch of dignity to our Christmas clam bake?
We look at our file under dignified, and there we find cultured, refined, suave, Herbert Marshall.
Thank you, Ken, my boy. It was nice of you to ask me over, but I'm in a bit of a hurry. I'm invited to Bob Hope's party again this year.
Oh, what's your hurry, Bart? The party isn't for a little while yet.
No, I have to go to the bank and get some change for tips.
Tips?
Sure. You can't get into that house unless you tip that fat fellow who opens the door.
Well, Bart, that's Bob Hope.
Well, he always takes it. By the way, Ken, who's going to be at the party this year?
Oh, people of great importance. Betty Davis, Luella Parsons, Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall, a lot of people.
How do you like that? He left that umbriago.
Jimmy Dory! Jimmy, I'd like to have you meet Herbert Marshall.
Glad to know you, Mr. Marshall.
It's a pleasure. The happenstance of this fortuitous meeting shall be added to my collection of appreciative enjoyment.
Sometimes I wish I could speak a foreign language. Look at the guy going out there, the guy with the horn. Get rid of that Harry James. You know, sometimes I wish I could speak a foreign language. Where's the page here?
Hold on.
Oh, yeah, I got it. That Bob Hope prayed for this. By the way, what nationality are you?
I come from England.
Oh, to be sure. That's in London, isn't it?
Yes, just on the outskirts.
It was lucky I met you tonight, Herbert. You don't mind if I call you by your maiden name?
No, no, please do. Please do.
You know, Bob Hope is going to give a big party tonight. What
yes.
A plug that guy is getting. Let me say it again, will you mind? You know, Bob Hope is going to give a big party tonight.
Yes, I understand it's going to be quite a soiree.
That's all right. I'll leave before the cops come. By the way, Mr. Marshall, you being British and coming from a long line of Brits makes you just the man I'm looking for. I may have a job for you.
A job?
Yes, I need a valet.
You mean...
Yes, I want you to be my gentleman's gentleman.
No, it won't work. We're short one gentleman.
Usher, stand erect. Add a little class to the joint. Repeat that line. I think I got a laugh here. Repeat that line. It won't work.
It won't work. We're short one gentleman.
Well, you can study nights. I got a million of them.
Jimmy, now, would you say that you occupy a social position sufficient to warrant having a manservant?
Indubitably. Why, I'm quite in demand at all social functions.
Really?
That's the way they write these things out of England.
Really? Uh-huh.
Last year, I officially opened the tea season by throwing out the first bag. I opened what happened to her since.
I had no idea you were such a pet of society.
Oh, yes. It's a well-known fact that Durante is practically stinking with charm.
Yeah, you'll pardon my skepticism, but a true gentleman must have a background of generations of culture.
It may interest you to note I have an Anglo-Saxon genealogy. They thought I couldn't pronounce it, the bums.
Anglo-Saxon, are you sure?
How can I be sure? I don't even know what it means.
Oh, it means that some of your ancestors were born in England. Is that true, Jimmy?
Yes. My great-grandfather, Sir Rumpelbottom Durante, was an important man in Wickenham County. In the regime of Henry IV, he presided over a big country seat.
Really, yeah.
Yes. But with the event of King Henry V, he fell into political disfavor. He was forced to move the country seat from Wickenham to Twickenham. Then he had to move it from Twickenham to Pickenham. What a dilemma. There he was with a big seat and no place to put it. Just a second. We're ready for a photograph, photographer.
You know, Jimmy, your mentioning the names of those English townships brings back memories of my young manhood. Many is the afternoon we young fellows used to go out hunting quail.
Just a minute. Did you say quail?
Yeah, that's a bird.
Pardon me, I mistook your intentions. But that is neither Kelly nor who. Mr. Marshal, I need your advice on a proper attire from which to attire myself for the party.
Well, I understand it's formal. Do you have any black trousers?
No, but I can always smear some kiwi on my long underwear.
Now, Jimmy, you can't go to a party in long underwear.
Why not? If things get dull, I can always make a graceful exit through the escape hatch in the back.
Well, Jimmy, seriously, things won't get dull if you sing a song. Why don't you rehearse one right now?
Noble idea, Mr. Marshall.
When it comes to that, I'm a vulture for culture.
I have a season pass at the Metropolitan Opera House. Let me tell you about it. Seeking my favorite diversion last night and feeling in the pink, I stepped into my push-up holstered hansom. With my two footmen commanding the poop deck and my Arabian steeds going at a gentle trot, we approaches the theater marquee, and what happens? The red carpet is rolled out. My two footmen descend from the poop deck. They open the door, and I steps out. Looking up from the gutter, I said, "Who told you to remove the running board?" Picking myself up and ignoring the stares of the hoi polloi, I makes my entrance gallantly into the Diamond Horseshoe. I looks around. Mrs. Van Schuyler is whispering to Mrs. Murray Hill. Mrs. Murray Hill is whispering to Mrs. Susquehanna. And what are they saying?
Is it a bird?
Is it a plane?
Is it Superman?
No, it's a bug.
You see, a vicious rumor's been circulated just because I work in a saloon. They say I'm not fit to mingle in any other circle. That's ridiculous. Nightclubs are just for Mr. Hyde part of me. You have yet to meet the Dr. Jekyll. I'm Durante, the patron of the arts. An opera critic and a man of parts. Last week I went to the opera. I loved it. All but one scene. That's where the 350-pound soprano sings to the baritone. She sings, "Take me in your arms and hold me close." Why, to hold her close, the bum would have to be curved like a banana. Those opera lovers, or Raven Handel's Largo, why, I've heard better music written by Umbriaco. Now, what I say may sound absurd, but believe me, it's true. I've seen every opera, and I'll name them for you. Tales of the Vienna Rolls, Madame Buttermilk, and the Sextet from Leashy Nuts. I coach sopranos and tenors in their parts, 'cause I'm Durante, the patron of the arts. Now, just the other day, they held a meeting at the Metropolitan in the cellar. They said, "Jimmy, we're in a hole. You got to help us out." Stepping up on a soapbox left over from La Boheme, I said, "Gentlemen, let's analyze this. Now take Romeo and Juliet. Romeo wants to kiss Juliet. But does he say, 'Slip me a smacker, sister'? No, he says, 'Give me a kiss, my love. A burning kiss upon the lips. A burning kiss, a kiss upon the lips. A burning kiss, a kiss, a kiss, a kiss, a kiss upon the lips. A burning kiss.' By the time the guy's ready to kiss her, the fire is out." Facing the committee, I said, "There's only one way to save the opera. Get yourself new lyrics that are very cheeky. Like, 'You can have him, I don't want him. He's too fat for me.'" They all gave thanks from the bottom of their hearts.
Durante, the patron of the arts.
A Kamasura, Durante, the patron of the arts.
Million, Jimmy, and thanks, Herbert Marshall. You're a muck with culture. Yes. And now, Andy the Russell. How about a song?
Well, here's a new one the guys and gals seem to like. Just for now. Just for now, let's call it romance. Just for now, let's take a chance. We both know it would seem to be the real thing that makes the bells ring. But dare we dream? Just for now,
Let's not be clever just for now. Let's just be gay and come what may, that certain day will find us somehow. It will be always instead of just for
marvelous, Andy. Marvelous. No wonder you're tops with the gang.
The tag on that said, especially for all the guys and gals down Austria way.
Gosh, but I get a thrill out of this Christmas season.
Yeah, so do I. The whole town's all prettied up. But I get a special kick out of Santa Claus Lane.
Yeah. The sides of Hollywood Boulevard are lined with towering Christmas trees.
Yeah, and all the movie stars are invited to parade past them.
Yeah, except for Lassie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then Santa Claus rides by on his sleigh.
Yeah, you know, this year Peter Lorre's playing Santa Claus.
Peter Lorre? Well, how do they pat him for the part?
They shove Sidney Greenstreet down his pants. Oh, boy, that Greenstreet. There's one actor who really pads his part.
Say, Gloria, are you going to have a party this year? Your shindig last year was great.
Oh, yeah. You remember you had dancing upstairs in that ballroom with the big bay window?
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Of course, I was just sort of an onlooker.
Well, hi, did you enjoy the party?
Yeah, I did, till I fell out of the tree. But, that's all behind me.
Yes, all right. Because we're having... Because we're having a Christmas party right here. And we've still got a huge pile of presents sparkling beneath the tree.
Right, kids, and say, here's a fine present for all the fellas listening in on the Bedside Network. It's a lovely girl ventriloquist who's covered 47 states entertaining in the hospital.
Yes, Andy, and lots of GIs passing through town saw her on television and asked us to bring her in. Many of them are stationed in far distant lands, and they know their kids will enjoy the gal on this Christmas day.
So here she is, Shirley Dinsdale, with her little friend, Judy Splinters.
Judy, you know, radio is doing the miracle.
It's old-fashioned.
It's what?
Now take television.
Be careful, Judy. You're on radio now.
I am?
Yes, you are.
I know, but television, you can do strange things.
Who can?
Well, maybe it's just me.
I think it is.
For instance, can you see into the homes of the kids overseas?
Of course not. No one can. I only wish we could look into their homes this Christmas day and see how they're enjoying themselves.
I can see them. Plain as day.
Judy, you can see them? Now, wait a minute.
Sure, I have television eyes.
Oh, there's that word again. Oh, wait a minute. That's right, you do. You see, I better explain this. Judy claims that she can see people in their homes like they see her when we're on television.
Sounds crazy. It's true.
Uh-huh.
There's only one catch. You've got to be young.
Uh-huh.
You can't have television eyes.
I can't? Oh, you make me sound old. Why not?
Because You're over 8 years old.
Thank goodness. Once a person passes eight, I suppose they,
No, they can't do it. They're just too old to see the things we young things see. They see different things.
Yes, I know. You know, we're not on television now.
I know, but television eyes gets to be a habit.
Oh, a habit.
Habit forming.
Oh, Judy.
And I can see anywhere. I'm just so nosy.
Uh-huh.
It's more fun.
Oh, what do you see now?
Well, there's... Oh, for goodness sake.
What is it?
Over there in Germany, I can see into the home of an American soldier. He's wearing sergeant stripes. You know, like, sergeant stripes forever.
Oh, Judy, stop it.
Wasn't funny?
No.
Well, I can see into the sergeant's house and I see lots of things. See? Two children under a Christmas tree. And a little boy and a little girl and... Look over there.
I can't see, Judy.
There's the mother.
The mother, uh-huh. What's she doing?
She's helping them some unwrapped presents and now she's going to the front door. She's walking, walk. Now she's letting in some visitors. Knock. They knock first. Oh, they're little German children.
They are?
Uh-huh, yeah. And then they're bringing some presents and... Oh, isn't that cute?
What's cute?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, Judy!
The cutest little boy I ever saw in my life. They're bringing some of those shoes like they wear in Holland. Well, oh, gee, I'd like to have some wooden shoes.
Wooden shoes?
Special wooden shoes. Uh-huh.
Oh, Judy, will you stop your puns?
I can't no more.
No more.
Okay, but look. Look at the children are so happy, and now the American children are giving some presents to the German youngsters. It's a real Christmas.
Well, I wish I had television eyes. What else can you see?
I'm going to go around the world.
You are?
I'll be back.
No, you stay here.
Well, I'm looking around on the other side of the world, and I can see some more American servicemen and their families over in Japan.
Japan?
Guess what?
What?
Just as I suspected.
What?
Their children are entertaining some little Japanese children. Isn't Christmas wonderful?
Well, it certainly is, Judy. It's the greatest day of the year, the world over, you know.
Yeah, I wish I could give everybody a Christmas present, like a kiss or something to the little boys.
Oh, Judy. You know you can give them something.
That's not what I said.
No, not what you said. You can give them a song. In fact, there's a little boy over there that wanted you to sing a certain song for him. So do you think you can?
I just have to guess what it is?
That's right. You want to try it?
Well, a song.
Uh-huh. Now, they'd like it. Go on.
Well, I'll sing it, but remember, you asked for it.
You've added a fresh sparkle to the Command Christmas tree. Well, Andy, do we have any more presents?
Oh, we've got a million of them. And you see that big package over there?
Yeah, what's that?
Well, it's a piano with a musician attached. And the musician is famous from coast to coast for his music craft, record albums, radio, and nightclub work. You've heard him on Piano Playhouse and other top shows. Right now, he's playing hooky from Nick Arden's fine night spot out in the valley in order to make us a Christmas gift of his music. Ladies and gentlemen, Walter Gross.
Thank you.
that was swell, really swell. Très magnifique. Grand, you really know your stuff.
Now for more culture. Many of you have heard the thrilling radio and motion picture drama, Sorry, Wrong Number. In the radio version, Miss Agnes Moorhead gave a stirring, vivid portrayal of the neurotic woman who hears a murder being plotted over cross telephone wires and finally learns that the intended victim of the murder is herself. In the cinema version, Miss Barbara Stanwyck's characterization is said to be truly an incomparable study in horror. This Christmas, we wanted to bring you this great drama, Sorry, Wrong Number, but Miss Moorhead and Miss Stanwyck, unfortunately, were unable to be with us. So we bring you instead another personality with the same dynamic appeal, Mr. Jack Benny.
We now take you to Mr. Benny's home in Beverly Hills, where we find Jack sitting anxiously by the telephone waiting, nerves shattered, another victim of suspense.
Busy, busy, busy. It can't be busy all this time. Operator, operator. Quiet, Polly. Operator, operator.
I'm sorry, that line is busy.
Listen, operator, I've been trying to get that number for the last 20 minutes. It's a big advertising agency. They have a switchboard.
I'm sorry, the line is busy.
It can't be busy. I've been ringing that number since 25 after 11. Do you know what time it is now?
For the correct time, dial Ulrich 8900.
Operator, I know what time it is. It's a quarter to 12.
Quarter to 12.
Polly, quiet. Listen, operator. I'm a subscriber. I pay my bills every month, and since I've been on this phone, I've had nothing but trouble.
Trouble? One moment, please. I will connect you.
Hmm. Repair department.
That's not my trouble. What do I have to do to get Hillside 7593?
Just call the operator.
Oh, my goodness. Why can't I? Operator. Operator.
Number, please.
Look, operator. I want Hillside 7593.
You may dial that number direct.
I did dial the number. I keep getting a busy signal. That's what I've been trying to tell you. Look, operator, I'm Jack Benny. I have a radio program. My option comes up at 12 o'clock tonight. If I don't hear from my sponsor, Mr. Jones, in 15 minutes, I'll be out of a job. He's the advertising manager. I'm trying to get him on the phone, and I can't get the number.
I will connect you with information.
Operator, don't you understand? I don't want information.
This is information.
Look, I don't want it. I want Sevenside Hill, 593. I mean Hillside, 7593.
You may dial that number direct.
Look, I've tried it direct. Indirect and spelled backwards. Now, what do I have to do to get Hillside 7593?
You may dial that number direct.
Oh, nuts. I don't know what to do. This is driving me mad. It keeps getting later. Later.
Quarter to 12.
Polly, quiet. Besides, it's 10 minutes to 12 now. Your watch is slow. Well, I'll try it. Whoop! There it is. It's my sponsor. He's calling me. Hello? Hello?
Mr. Benny?
Yes.
It's 50 words or less, isn't it?
The contest is over. Fine time to ask about my contest. If my sponsor doesn't call me pretty soon, I'll go nuts. I still have 8 minutes. I got to reach Mr. Jones by 12 o'clock. Polly, quiet. Here's a cracker. And eat it slowly. It might be your last. Well, I'll try that number again. It can't be still busy. I know it can't. I'm sure there must be something wrong with the...
Hello?
Hello, is that you, Mr. Jones?
Mr. Jones,
that's my sponsor. Mrs. Jones, this is me, Jack Benny.
Hello, George?
They can't hear me. The wires must be crossed.
Yes, George. I've thought the matter over thoroughly, and I've decided to let him go.
I see. Well, it's going to be quite a shock to him. He's been with us a long time.
Well, George, he's had it coming. His work has fallen off so badly, it isn't funny anymore.
Yipe! What are you talking about me? Mr. Jones, operator.
Well, Mr. Jones, don't you think you ought to warn him and give him another chance? It might be difficult to replace him.
That's right. Tell him, George. Tell him. Nice boy, George. Nice boy. Tell him.
No, George. I've made up my mind. I think we should look for a younger man.
Younger? Why, I'm only 37. 37.
37 and 37, that's 75.
door, you dope. Can't you count? So you don't think warning him would do any good, eh, Mr. Jones?
No, no. He's had his chance.
Mr. Jones, please. George had a swell idea. Warn me. Give me another chance. I might be difficult to replace.
All right, Mr. Jones. I'll let him...
I've been cut off. Operator! Operator! Operator.
Number, please.
Operator, I want Hillside 7953. Will you please get it for me?
You may dial that number direct.
But I've been dialing all morning. My fingers are so swollen, they don't fit into the hole.
One moment, please. I will try that number for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Only 5 minutes to go. I can only talk to Mr. Jones. I can just plead with him. Beg him like I did last year. Maybe I could talk him into giving me another...
Sorry, that line is busy.
Busy, busy, busy. What am I going to do? I got to think fast.
Busy, busy, busy.
Polly, shut up! This is serious. You may have to go to work. 4 minutes to 12. Wait a minute, I know. I'll call my agent. That's it, my agent. Why am I paying him 9%? I'll try and get him. That might be Mr. Jones. Hello?
Hello, is that you, Edna?
Edna?
This is Johnny McGuire. I just got back from the South Pacific. I haven't seen a woman in 3 years. You're the first one I called.
Look, you must have the wrong number.
Oh, don't give me that, Edna. I recognize your voice right away.
Look, but
Now, what do you say, Edna? Let you and me step out tonight and I'll buy you a nice big dinner.
Look, I'm telling you, you have the wrong... Dinner? No, what am I thinking of? He'd only want to... I'm sorry, you have the wrong number. I wish I was that. At least then I'd know where... Oh, my goodness, only 3 minutes to 12. No time to call my agent now. I gotta get Mr. Jones. Maybe he hasn't signed anybody else yet. I'll tell him I'll do anything he asks me. Anything. I'll let him cut my salary. This year I'll suggest it myself. The line's clear. It's not busy. I still have time.
This is Hillside, 7593.
Get me Mr. Jones, quick. This is Jack Benny.
Mr. Jones is busy on another line. Would you call back?
No, I'll hold on. Oh, hurry, Mr. Jones, hurry. You haven't got much time. I mean, I haven't got much time. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Is that you, Mr. Jones? Oh, it's you, Polly. Shut your big mouth.
Hello? What's that?
Mr. Jones. I wasn't talking to you, Mr. Jones. It wasn't your big mouth. It was my parrot. This is Jack Benny.
Oh, well, Jack, I'm glad you called. I wanted to tell
you... Mr. Jones, please, before you say anything, listen to me. You gotta listen to me. I know I've been on the air a long time, but I'm not through yet. Honest, I'm not. There's still a few good years left in me, and I want you to have them.
But, Jack...
L-A-S-M-F-T! L-A-S-M-F-T! L-A-S-M-F-T!
But, Jack...
I know I made mistakes, Mr. Jones. Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, everybody but you, Mr. Jones. You always do the right thing. You're wise, smart, intelligent, kind. That's it, kind. You're too kind to cast me aside like an old shoe. Give me another chance. Please, please, Mr. Jones. Don't drop my option.
Why, Jack, what are you crying about? We've no intention of letting you go.
Honest, Mr. Jones, if you'd only give me... What? You mean you're going to pick up my option?
Why, certainly. I've been trying to call you all morning. Your phone's been busy.
My phone? Busy? Oh.
Tell me, Jack, whatever gave you the idea we wouldn't take up your option?
Well, Mr. Jones, I called you a few minutes ago, and the wires got crossed. I heard you talking to a man named George.
George? Oh, yes, he's my office manager.
Well, I overheard you telling him to let somebody go. You wanted a younger man.
Oh, I remember, certainly. I discharged him this morning. It was the janitor.
The janitor?
Yes.
Oh, the janitor. Well, the joke's certainly on me. Well, Mr. Jones, if the man wasn't doing his work, what else could you do? It's not your fault if the man isn't capable. There's no place for sentiment in business, Mr. Jones. That's what I like about you, Mr. Jones. You don't let your heart rule your head. That janitor got what was coming to him. I don't believe in a man whining and trying to hang on to a job when he's not wanted. I agree with you. If a man fails to deliver, let him go. Get rid of him, I say. Fire him.
And now for an added Christmas note or two, here's Bob Mitchell and the Boys Choir.
before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature is stirring, not even a mouse. Better watch out, better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Making a list, checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out. Better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Have you been good as you could? Boys and girls all should. Who didn't mind and who has been kind as any good youngster would? Oh.
Better watch out. Better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
He's making a list, checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice.
Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
He knows if you've been bad or good.
So be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out. Better not cry. Better not bow. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Welcome back to the ball. It's still the big Christmas command performance with lots of goodies lined up and waiting for you. And that includes Brother Andy Russell, Brother yours truly, Hi Averback, and Gloria, Brother DeHaven. Say, Gloria, anything wrong? You look kind of worried.
Well, a whack captain sent us one Christmas request. I'm afraid we just can't fill.
It must be a tough one. What did she ask us Santa Claus to send her?
A perfect man.
Well, you can't send me overseas.
Oh, really? Hollywood femininity would go insane with desire.
Hi, you said you'd help me find a perfect man.
Well, I tried. I tried hard. I spent 3 hours in the powder room of the Plaza Hotel.
Oh, hi. The powder room is for women only. You were wasting your time in there.
I was?
Yes.
Look, Andy, old boy, you have your philosophy and I'll have mine.
Oh, gee, but how are we going to find the perfect man?
Hello?
Why, say. Look, there's an old friend of ours. He's an Armed Forces Radio Institution.
Who's that?
I'm a Private Sand Sack.
Why, of course. Merry Christmas, Sack.
Happy New Year!
How was that, Sack? What did you say?
Huh? Oh, I said a happy new year. Happy new year. Happy new year. Merry Christmas.
Oh, that's fine, Sack. Say, what brings you here?
Oh, I came to render the season's degree. I came to lecture on sociology. I saw the dame.
Oh, Sack, is that all you enjoy in life, chasing women? Isn't there anything you enjoy more than chasing women?
Well, sure, I like a bit book. I like literature, physics and astronomy. I like catching them.
Well, Sack, we're too busy to talk to you now. We're looking for the perfect man.
Oh, well, I'm the perfect man. Look, I got a big chair. I wear a falsie.
Now, look, Sad Sack, why do you have such a low IQ?
Oh, I can't help it. My suspenders are loose.
Well, I don't think you're the perfect man, Sack, but a girl will have to be the judge. And here's our judge, Miss Gloria DeHaven.
Hi,
Sack. Wow. Hey, she's wonderful. She's a sensation in the air. She's really a she.
I'm the judge.
The judge? Oh, but I thought a judge was a dignified old a man with a long she's a good girl with leg. but boy, what a pair of gavels.
Just call me Gavels Gertie. What's new, Sad Sack?
Oh, I've had a wild time. I played Santa Claus for a bunch of tough kids. See, I wore a red suit with a big pillow in the pants.
Now, there's an original idea, a pillow in the pants.
And then a big kid hit me in the stomach.
What did you do?
I hit him in the new... I snowed on him for 10 minutes.
Wonderful. Just wonderful. But now, Sad Sack, if we're going to consider you for the perfect man, I'll have to take your measurement. Do you mind? I can see you don't. No, I haven't got a tape measure, so I'll have to put my arms around you to measure your chest.
Yeah, now, take it easy now. I'm tickled a little bit. I'm kind of sensitive to you. Go as far as you like, I can take it.
All right, Goy, all right. Let's have his chest measurement.
Okay. Chest normal, 32. Now inhale. Chest expanded, 31.
All right, and now try the kiss test.
Kiss test?
Yes, come here, you cute thing.
Oh, no. If Father said never to kiss a stranger. My father told me not to kiss. Father said to the... Hey, go ahead. Who's trying to kiss my father?
All right, now, you little honey love. Now, take me in your arms. hold me close. Very, very close.
You stay here. I'll be right back.
Well, where are you going? Aren't you going to kiss me?
Sure. But first I'm going to turn in my good conduct medal.
Oh, that was great. Really great. Thanks a million. Mel Blanc.
Oh, Andy.
Yes, Gloria.
Something tells me the listeners really know their stuff. You know, from all over the world, they've been writing in asking for a number you recorded some time ago. It's still at the top, and it's going to stay there for a long time to come. Andy, we can't think of a finer gift for the gang than a Russell reading of the Capitol Classic without you.
Run for your earmuffs, fellas. Here it comes.
I'm so lonely and blue when I'm without you. I don't know what I'd do, sweetheart, without you. The joy and tears that love endears would have no meaning if I didn't have you to keep me dreaming. At the close of each day, when I'm without you, and my heart kneels to pray, I pray about you. You take a star and lead it far away from heaven, and the star will be lost as I'm lost without you. Con tres palabras te diré todas mis cosas, cosas del corazón que son preciosas. Dame tus manos, ven, toma las mías, que te voy a confiar las conciencias mías. Son tres palabras solamente mis angustias, y esas palabras son como me gusta.
Sweet, Andy. That was really something.
Thank you, but let's get on to opening more presents, huh?
That's a ginger peachy idea. And look, here's a bundle for all of us. But the tag says, specially for the listeners who are really having a white Christmas up in Sitka, Nome, and Point North. It's the boy you've loved on many a command performance. His record album is under lots of trees this Christmas. Let's welcome the lad with the magic harp, Robert Maxwell.
Robert Maxwell plays the music of George Gershwin.
Thank you.
Christmas party can be complete without a good old-fashioned Christmas story. And I think we'll find one if we tear open the wrappings on this glittering package here and look in on Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Well, here we are again, Charlie.
Yes, so what?
Here we are. I must say that I'm a little shocked at your attitude.
Why?
Why, at this season of the year, everybody's happy.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's on their best behavior because it's close to Christmas.
Yeah, sure, sure. I was on my best behavior last year. What did I get? Nothing. I was so good. I was...
Oh, you fire buzzard, you little...
Now, Charlie.
Snapping those flashlights. Well, now, now, you apologize to that man.
I'm not through bawling him out yet.
All right.
I'm very sorry, sir.
You know.
Take another one, will you?
Yeah. Now, where was I?
You were laying an egg right there. Yeah.
Well, if I remember correctly, Charlie, Santa Claus put something in your stocking last year.
Well, he didn't stretch them out of shape, I'll say that. He didn't need a reindeer to deliver them. But I got he could have slipped under the door.
Oh.
A swallow could have dropped it off on the way to Capistrano.
Well, perhaps you're expecting too much.
Well, all I asked for was a motorcycle, a speedboat, and a rifle. What did I get? Stockings, woolen underwear... and a do-bill for some dental work. You know what I think, Bergen?
What?
You mailed the Christmas list. You didn't mail that. You mailed the laundry list.
Is that? Well, I investigated that, Charlie, and I found out.
Yeah?
Santa Claus was afraid to come down our narrow chimney.
Are you right?
Yes. Claustrophobia, yes. You've heard of Santa claustrophobia, haven't you?
What are you griping about? I got to live with him.
All right.
Bergen, you laid it, you lie in it, all right. Isn't it enough that I hate you? Do I have to be ashamed of you beside?
All right. Well, I have a sneaking suspicion that you're going to get some pretty nice presents this year. That is providing.
I knew there was a catch in it.
Providing you've memorized your piece tonight before Christmas.
Yes.
Then, of course, I know you have. And so I'm going to introduce you to this audience.
Uh-huh.
Now, ladies and gentlemen... Oh, you want over there, too, huh? Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to hear the famous classic, The Night Before Christmas, by Clement Clark Moore.
I bet he wouldn't have written it if he had to memorize it.
Yeah. Now, go ahead.
I could recite better to memory if I had the book in front of me.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. No.
Listen, my children, you shall hear the midnight ride of Santa Revere.
No.
I got off to that start,
yes.
Under the studding Christmas tree, village Santa stands.
No.
Did he go?
Yeah. Perhaps I better start you off. It was the night before Christmas and all through the house.
Gad, Bergen, you took the words out of my mouth. I'm glad to get rid of them.
Yeah. Now, what's the next line?
Christmas for the house. Christmas me all through the house. What's the next line?
No. Not a creature was stirring, not even
a louse. No.
The stockings were hung where?
On a nail?
No, no, no.
By the chimney with care, in hopes the laundry man soon would be there.
In hopes that Saint... Saint who?
Saint Vitus.
No.
Saint Bernard.
No.
Saint Paul.
No.
Minneapolis.
No.
I'm on the wrong track.
Yes. You don't know.
No. I hate myself for not knowing. Just hate myself.
In hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
Semicolon.
That's fine. The children were nestled all snug in their bed.
Shoot if you must this old gray hair.
No, no. Surely you know the part about Santa Claus as he rides through the skies?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He flies through the air with the greatest of ease. The jolly fat man in the red DVD.
No, the next line is, when out on the lawn there arose such a clatter.
What'd you do?
I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter.
Oh, yeah. I tore open the shutters and threw up the sack.
Dancer and Prancer
and Dandruff and Blintus.
No.
Donner and Lightning.
No, no, no. Donner.
Oh, yeah. Donner and Meachie.
No, no.
I didn't know he made the team.
Now, wait. And then, on Dancer, on Prancer.
And what do you know? Prancer came in, paid 22 to show.
No.
The end. Give me the present.
No, no. Charlie, I don't believe you know the poem at all. I don't believe you've studied it, have you?
No, sir, I haven't.
Well, much as you were honest about it, I'm going to give you this lovely present anyway.
Oh, thank you. Bless you. Bless you. What is it?
Well, it's a beautifully illustrated copy of the famous poem, The Night Before Christmas.
Yes. Is that a present? Is that what I get?
That's what you get.
Virgin, this is Christmas, not April Fool. All right.
Yes, we're having fun. Now, I wonder how Bob Hope is doing at his big Christmas party. Let's peek in on his house this merry day. Oh, it's a triumphant moment for Bob. All his friends are there to help him celebrate. Everyone who loves him is at his house today. Let's look in on this scene of gaiety.
For I'm a jolly good fellow. For I'm a jolly good fellow. For I'm a jolly good fellow, which nobody can deny.
Cause no one's there.
You can't sing either, huh?
Well, 11:30, looks like no one's coming. I'm sure they could find the house unless my neon sign went out. The one that says guided tours through the home of the world's number one comedian. Men a dollar, children 50 cents. Women, I'm sure we can come to terms. Gee, what a letdown. Oh, well, I'll stretch out on the couch for a few minutes and take it easy. Oh, this is comfortable. Hetty, please. Don't, Hetty, not in public. Hetty, stop. It's not nice to bite your nail.
Gee, look, on the couch.
Bob, that's asleep.
Aw, isn't he cute all curled up?
Curled up is right.
You think he'd get his nose straightened out?
And I gotta be sleeping.
So that's what Bob looks like when he's asleep.
Yeah, ghastly, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know. He's kind of nice looking. Look at that square chin. And look at those square shoulders.
Yeah, he's one of the biggest squares I ever seen.
I think he's snoring. Oh, look, he's awake.
Well, so you got here after all, huh?
Why, sure, Bob. You didn't think we'd desert you on Christmas Eve, did you? Well,
no, sir. We simply had to come here tonight because our widow dream man is here.
Well, now you're talking.
And we all want to give our dream man a kiss.
This gets better and better. Keep moving.
And we just want to love him to death.
One at a time, girls.
Say, we're not going to wait another minute. We're going to start kissing right now.
Yeah, not so fast. Emily, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Well, gang, we have another wonderful package waiting under the Christmas tree. And what a package. Believe it or not, much of our mail asks for genuinely fine music. Well, for a super special treat, we raided the Metropolitan and got away with a man who's considered the very best. We're honored indeed to present Lawrence Melchior.
Adds a special luster to this Christmas command with the loveliest carol of them all.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. And these hymns all of us like to sing. So I think we should all join and sing that. Would you join us all and sing that hymn?
Christmas season brings with it the finest of all man's attempts to find beauty in his life. No music is more beautiful than the carols of Christmas time. No deeper spirit of friendship and brotherhood can be found than that in the faces of people all over the world getting ready for Christmas. And no literature is more widely read or better loved than the stories of that first Christmas.
That's right, Andy. And tonight, Command Performance presents one of those stories. By special arrangement with Harper and Brothers Publishers, we bring you Henry Van Dyke's tale of The Other Wise Man. And here as our stars are the ever-popular Robert Young as narrator and Marvin Miller as Artaban, the other wise man.
You know the story of the three wise men of the East, how they traveled from far away to offer their gifts at the manger cradle in Bethlehem. Their story is well known and widely told. Mine is not. For this is the story of the fourth pilgrim. And there are few who know of this man who also saw the star in its rising. I myself know only fragments of the tale. For I heard it once in the Hall of Dreams, in the palace of the heart of man. In the days when Augustus Caesar was master of many kings and Herod reigned in Jerusalem, there lived in the city of Ecbatana, among the mountains of Persia, a certain man named Artaban. Around his dwelling spread a fair garden, made musical by innumerable birds. But all color was lost in the soft and odorous darkness of the late September night, and all sounds were hushed in the deep charm of its silence. High above the trees, a dim glow of light shone through the curtained arches of the upper chamber. The master of the house was holding counsel with his friends.
It cannot be.
Peace, my brothers. I will tell you all in time. May I proceed, Father?
We here are all disciples of Zoroaster. To us, new light and new truth come through the old symbols. What new light has come to you, Artaban?
My father and my brethren, you know that the highest of all learning of the Magi is the study of the stars, the heavenly signs. If we could understand them perfectly, all wisdom would be ours. But our knowledge is incomplete. Strange new stars arise and sink, and are many others beyond our horizon.
This is no news. Every child knows it.
That is true, Tigre.
Am I barbarous with this prattle? Is it folly for man to try to read the stars? The Magi are wise because they know their own ignorance and keep it a secret. We tell men always to look and wait for a new sunrise of truth. But we ourselves believe that the powers of good and evil are balanced. The darkness is as strong as the light.
No, brothers, that does not satisfy me. Why wait if there is no fulfillment? Why struggle if there is to be no victory? Our own sacred books teach us better things, that truth will win the victory, and that a great light shall rise on the world and conquer darkness.
That is true. Every faithful disciple of Zoroaster carries the prophecy of the Avesta in his heart. You remember it, each of you. In that day, the victorious one shall arise out of the prophets in the East Country. Around him shall shine a mighty brightness. He shall make life incorruptible and immortal, and the dead shall rise again.
Tis a dark saying, my friends. Who can interpret it? A word of the wind that we shall never understand? This victorious one, if he ever comes, would replace the Magi in our own country. He would be a stranger to whom we must submit.
No,
brothers. Listen not to Tigranes. With three of my comrades among the Magi, Gaspar, Melchior, and Balthazar, I have studied the secret numbers. We find that the time falls in this very year.
Is that possible?
Moreover, we have seen a wonderful thing in the sky. In the sign of the zodiac called the Fishes, the sign of the Hebrew nation, a bright new star suddenly appeared in conjunction with Jupiter and Saturn. That was last spring. Tonight, the two great planets will come together again. My three comrades are watching at the ruined temple of Borsippa. I am watching here. If the new star appears again, they will wait 10 days for us to join them. Then our caravan will cross the desert to Jerusalem to greet and worship the new king.
You say us and our, my brother. Are you not presuming a trifle too much?
But I thought... Surely you will all accompany me to the shrine of our newborn king.
Artaban, you're mad. Too much stargazing, too much poring over mystical books. No, Artaban, the old religion is good enough. No new king will rise from the broken race of Israel. No end will come to the eternal strife of light and darkness. You are a chaser of shadows. I, for one, will not share your folly. And how about you others? Will you, too, chase the shadows?
I'm sorry, Artaban. These things are too deep for me. I shall stick to my office in the royal treasury. But if you must go, I bid you farewell.
They are right, brother. It is folly that you speak. Besides, in my house sleeps a new bride. I cannot leave her nor take her with me on this strange journey. So if your heart is set on such an adventure, I pray that your lonely steps be prosperous. Farewell.
I am ill, Artaban, and unfit for hardship. But I have a servant that I will send with you to bring me word how you fare.
No, Marcina. I shall travel alone.
You see, brother, it is only you who sees in the stars a mystic something that is not there. Will you not drop this madness now?
The star will come tonight, Tigranes, and I shall follow it. Do not worry for my sanity or trouble too deeply about my wanderings. It is I who feel sorry for you.
Ah, useless to argue. Come, Arsena. Let us leave this dreamer in his talk.
Well, Father, they have all gone. They do not believe. Do you also doubt my words?
No, my son. I have seen many strange things among the Magi. In the heavens and in the earth itself are the signs of immortality. But can you meet the hardships and dangers? Have you counted the cost?
As surely as the star shines tonight, I shall follow it even to the end of the earth. I am resolved to meet the king who comes to save the world. Look, Father, here in my robe. So sure am I that I have sold all my possessions and even my house. And now I have this tribute to carry to the king. See, these three royal jewels. A sapphire for truth. A ruby for love. A pearl for purity. Royal jewels for the king of all mankind.
They are indeed jewels fit for a king. Artaban, my son, if your star is a true sign, it will lead you to a new light. If it be only a shadow, you will have a long journey and vain search. Yet it is better to follow even the shadow of the best than to cling to the substance of what does not satisfy your soul. I love you, Artaban, and my heart goes with you on your lone pilgrimage. Go in peace, and find your king in joy.
Thank you, Father. It is enough for me to know.
Father, look! There! Through the window!
Yes, my son! I see it! The morning star!
It is my star! The new star! Brightest of all! The morning star of a new day!
The mist swirled through the Hall of Dreams and the scene faded from view. And then, as quickly as they had come, the clouds faded and a new picture appeared. The other wise man had begun his long odyssey following the star. He rode swiftly through the desert and across the plains, striving to keep the appointed hour with the other wise men. Over cold and desolate mountains, across the windswept shoulders of the hills, down through black ravines and across the swirling floods of charging rivers, Artaban pressed onward, until at last he arrived at nightfall on the last day, beneath the shattered walls of Babylon. He knew that it was but 3 hours' journey. He must reach the place by midnight if he would find his comrades waiting. And then, in the pale yellow sea of the desert sands, where a grove of date palms made a tiny island, his gallant steed faltered, carrying her head low, scenting danger ahead. At last she gave a sudden start and stood with every muscle quivering. There at her feet, half hidden in the shadow of the last palm tree, lay a man. A man who was near unto death. Artaban dismounted and turned to the unfortunate one. Hour after hour he labored, bringing him water from the pool nearby, moistening his fevered brow, preparing a potent medicine that he carried. At last the man's strength returned. He sat up and looked about him and spoke his first words.
Who art thou, friend?
Easy. Rest easy.
Why hast thou sought me here to bring back my life?
I am Artaban, the Magian. I am going to Jerusalem in search of one who is to be born a great prince and deliverer of men. I found you thus sick and without help, and I could not leave you.
But thou art a Magian, and still thou could not help but know that I am a Jew.
It is of no importance. How did this happen?
I was in debt. Only recently did I gather my possessions together and set about to become a free man. I was journeying to Babylon for that purpose, and here at this oasis, I fell in with a band of thieves. They beat me, stripped me of all my clothes and all my goods and camels, and left me thus to die. But why did thou save me? Now I would be better off dead.
Nay, friend, it is not so.
Yes, yes. I have nothing. To go to Babylon means to face prison or worse. To leave this country means the loss of all self-respect, because I cannot pay that which I owe.
Perhaps I can help.
No, Artaban. Thou hast done enough. Enough.
I must leave now. Already I have missed my comrades who were waiting. But I can save you from debtor's prison with this. See? Here. It is yours to use in rebuilding your life.
That fire. A sapphire as blue as the waters of the ocean. A jewel of priceless value. Fit for a king.
It will be enough. And now I must hasten.
Stay. Stay but a moment. I have nothing to give thee in return. Only this. That I can tell thee where the Messiah must be sought.
I am now on my way to Jerusalem.
No. Our prophets have said that he should be born not in Jerusalem, but in Bethlehem of Judea.
Ah, you have saved me a long journey. You have repaid me in full.
Then, Artaban, may the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob bless and prosper thy feet and bring thee in safety to the birthplace of the king. Oh.
silence in the Hall of Dreams where I was listening to the story of the other wise man. And through this silence I saw, but very dimly, his figure passing over the dreary wastes of the desert, through the valley of the Jordan, beside the blue waters of the Lake of Galilee, and into the highlands of Judea. Artaban moved steadily onward until at last he arrived in Bethlehem. And it was some days after the three wise men had come to that place and had found Mary and Joseph with their young child Jesus and had laid their gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh at his feet and returned home. Now Artaban, the other wise man, drew near, weary but full of hope, bearing his ruby and his pearl to offer to the king. The streets of the village seemed to be deserted. Perhaps the men had all gone up to the hill pastures to bring down their sheep. His figure stopped in front of a low stone cottage whence came the voice of a woman singing softly to her child.
Who are you?
Be not afraid, sister. I only wish to ask if you have seen three comrades of mine, dressed as I am in the clothes of the Magi, who came here some days ago.
Yes, there came three travelers nearly a week past. They said they followed a star.
They are the ones. Tell me, I pray you, where is the place they sought?
The star led them to a manger where Joseph of Nazareth and Mary, his wife, and a young child lay. The travelers made offerings of gold and sweet spices to the child and then went their way.
Do you know where the Holy Family went, sister?
No, I'm sorry. But it is said that Joseph and Mary took the babe and fled secretly by night into Egypt.
Why did they leave?
There isn't even a rumor that King Herod is sending his soldiers here to oppress the village for more taxes or to work some dreadful cruelty. That is why the streets are empty.
I see.
The men have driven their flocks back to the hills for hiding, and women with children dare not venture out. I am in terror for my own child.
A pretty baby. You must be very proud. Your own boy might have been the promised prince. Kings have been born in lowlier houses than this. Ah, well, the one whom I seek has gone before me. I must follow the king to Egypt. What is that up the street, that noise?
The soldiers. The soldiers of Herod. They're killing the children as they go.
Quickly, into the house. I will see that no harm comes to you.
My baby, God protect
me. Stand aside there.
Would you strike down a Magian, sir?
I have no quarrel with you, but my orders are to kill every man child under 2 years. King Herod himself has commanded it. Now stand aside.
There is only a woman in the house, sir. And I have been waiting for you.
Waiting? For me?
I have been waiting to give a present to the wise and brave captain who will leave us in peace.
Well, I don't...
See how it shines, this blood-red ruby.
Yes. Deep red, like the blood on my sword. A burning red, like the embers of a dying fire. Jewel fit for a king. Very well. Pass on, men. There is no child here. The house is empty except for this Persian gentleman. I have done as you said, my lord. Now I wish you good fortune.
Thank God you've saved my baby.
God of truth, forgive me. I have said the thing that is not to save the life of this child. I have spent for man what I set apart for God. Two of my jewels are gone. Shall I ever be worthy to look upon the face of the king?
I can say nothing, sir, except this benediction. May the Lord bless and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Lift up the light of his countenance upon you and give you peace.
Again, there was silence in the Hall of Dreams, deeper and more mysterious than the first interval. And I understood that the years of Artaban were flowing very swiftly under the stillness. I caught only a glimpse here and there of the other wise man traveling from place to place in his search. And in this populous and intricate world of anguish, though he found none to worship, he found many to help. He fed the hungry, clothed the naked, healed the sick. His hair, once darker than the night, turned as white as the wintry snow during those 33 years. Now at last, worn, weary, and ready to die, but still looking for the king, he had come for the last time to Jerusalem. It was the season of the Passover. The city was thronged with strangers, but on this day there was singular agitation visible in the multitude. The sky was veiled with a portentous gloom. Currents of excitement seemed to flash through the crowd like the thrill which shakes the forest on the eve of a storm. A secret tide was sweeping them all one way. The clatter of sandals and the soft, thick murmur of thousands of bare feet shuffling over the stones flowed unceasingly along the street that leads through the Damascus Gate.
Please, please, will someone stop for a moment?
You are in the way, old man.
Friend, tell me, why are all these people here? Where are they going? Why are they so sad of countenance?
Have you not heard, sir? Today there was a crucifixion on the hill called Golgotha. Two thieves on their crosses, and between them a prophet from Nazareth.
A prophet?
He was a good man. The common people loved him. But the priests bore him hatred because he taught strange new doctrines. He was a holy and just man. Very kind to all who suffer. Merciful even to sinners. There are those who say that he was the Son of God. It is a pity he is dead.
The Son of God? The King? Can this be the King I have sought all over the world? On the cross, in the hands of his enemy. But he may not be dead. I may yet be in time to save him. My pearl, my last treasure. It will be his ransom. At least to save his body. I must hurry.
Have pity on me. For the sake of the God of Purity.
What is it, daughter?
Come along there. We have no time for this.
Take your hands from that girl. I am a kinsman of hers.
That may well be. But she has been seized for the death of her father to be sold into slavery.
It is true. But I am a daughter of the faith and have not sinned. Shall the sins of my father be visited unto me? I pray you save me from this.
Come, girl, quickly.
No, wait. I will make you rich, soldier. See, this will redeem the girl from bondage. It is yours for her release.
Pearl of great price, as pure as snow, worth a king's ransom.
Take it and go.
Very well, sir. The girl is yours.
How can I thank you, sir? Or is it that you want me for a slave?
No, my daughter. You are free. Go your way in peace.
As Artaban spoke, the darkness of the sky deepened, and shuddering tremors ran through the earth, heaving convulsively as though struggling with a mighty grief. The walls of the houses rocked to and fro. Stones were loosened and crashed into the street. Dust clouds filled the air. The people fled in terror. But Artaban and the girl crouched helplessly beneath the wall of the temple. One more lingering pulsation of the earthquake quivered through the ground. Suddenly a heavy tile, shaken from the roof of the temple, fell and struck the old man, hurling him to the earth. He lay breathless and pale, with his gray head resting on the young girl's shoulder. As she bent over him, there came a voice through the twilight, very small, still, like music sounding from a distance, in which the notes are clear, but the words are lost. The girl turned to see if someone had spoken from the window above them, but she saw no one. Then the lips of the old man began to move as if in answer. And she heard him say,
"Not so. Not so, my lord. For when saw I thee an hungered man and fed thee? Or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw I thee a stranger and took thee in? Or naked and clothed thee? When saw I thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? 33 years have I looked for thee, but I have never seen thy face, nor ministered unto thee, my king."
He ceased, and the voice came again. And again the girl heard it, but now the words were clear and strong. "Verily, I say unto thee, inasmuch as thou hast done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, thou hast done it unto me." A calm radiance of wonder and joy lighted the pale face of Artaban. His journey was ended. His treasures were accepted. The other wise man had found the king.
Committee. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.